Blog Talk Radio.
This is Walter Dean, Dr. Dean as opposed, and this is Getting It Done. Tune myself out. That was me doing it again, and I can see there's a whole lot of people on the board. And today's show is in Getting It Done, and I must say good evening to all of you, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the program called Getting It Done, and I am your host, Dr. Walter Dean. We started our previous shows with rating the world's greatest jazz pianists. Therefore, Oscar Peterson was rated number one. Earl Garner, who we listened to last week, that brings us to, and he was number two, and that brings us to who was rated third internationally as the great jazz pianist. Now, both of these individuals, Garner and Peterson, actually tried to learn how to play by the gentleman who is number three this week, and they surpassed him. It's good when a teacher is surpassed by people who try to follow in their footsteps. And this week's show is about who was rated third, and that is a fantastic individual by the name. I'm not going to tell you his name. Let's see if I can pull something up And then, and at that particular point, you know, maybe I better tell you, it's Art Tatum, because this man's hands were so fast, it's just unbelievable what he could do at a piano. I found that the man was a remarkable person because he was blindfolded. Actually, not blindfolded, he was blind, and he was unable to actually do all the things that other people do, and he didn't learn by reading music because he couldn't see it. And at that particular time, they didn't have Braille. And the Braille that they had were limited to the particular individuals who actually could be able to learn it and use it. And so what happens is that this man started learning at a very early age, just like some of the other people that I talked to you about. And I'm trying to pull this man's up his music up, because I pushed one switch, and when you pull one switch and you pull it wrong, you're messed up, fuck. And stuff can get messed up really quick. So I'm going to see if I can pull that back up and see if it'll be a possibility of me being able to set you in line of hearing such greatness that it's really difficult to even understand what was all about in this man's actually having the remarkable ability. Here's something that lasts for only 2 minutes and 1 second, but you get a taste of what this man actually could do. Here is the great Art. Fantastic blind person, Art Tatum, playing Yesterday as a song that I had an opportunity to sing it myself. It was a beautiful rendition by Frank Sinatra that you, if you ever have an opportunity to hear it, how he sings about things that happened to him in the past, and that's a fantastic song. Yes, that was the great Art Tatum, who was considered to be the best until Peterson and Garner came along. From the late 1930s until the late 1950s, Tatum was considered to be number one jazz pianist in the world. He is rated the best pianist at that particular time, and others tried to play like him, but were never able to be totally successful. It has often sounded like two people playing when listening to him play with such broadness. He was born in October 1909. In Ohio, largely self-taught, and was legally blind, and became a big star in the 1930s, in New York City, but started playing professionally in 1927. Came to New York at the age of 26. Let's listen to something else that he did, and you might find it remarkable. This man is unreal. From an album called The Best of author Art Tatum, done in 1944, which is actually sounds like some music that was done later on. But if you can, you'll notice there's a distinct, if those of you who are music aficionados will understand that there was a jazz kind of thing that was going on back in the 1940s and the 1950s. And where people like Teddy Wilson, who actually was one really, he and Father Hines really were the presenters of a particular style of jazz. Some of them, that goes all the way back to the 1800s, which was something like the honky-tonk that people used to play at the in bars and saloons out in the West. Later on, this music was played for silent movies, and this when we're talking about the genius of Art Tatum, we're talking about him taking it to a completely different level. And all these people who we're talking about, like Teddy Wilson, Nat King Cole, the same thing with Oscar Peterson, and later on, other musicians, you will like Thelonious Monk. Which we will talk about, tried to emulate this great man right here. Only two people were able to surpass him, and as far as I am concerned, and as far as some of the other great jazz musicians who are still living today, believe, and Art Tatum, to me, was one of the greatest musicians on the piano during that particular period in the 1930s and all the way to the 1950s. He died in 1957. He really wasn't an old man when he passed on. But he had a lot of health problems and health issues. He didn't die from drugs like many musicians. And when he would walk in to play, people would, you know, help him in because of, like, he was totally blind. People would just stand up because of his genius. And a man who never took a lesson in his doggone day and play like he played is it's remarkable. Let's see if we can listen to some more of his stuff without me running my mouth. Listen. ¶¶ A great Art Tatum and his what you might consider to be something very special that he did in the 1947. He's given credit for a lot of things, but that left hand and right hand of his, when he played with it, actually put out of sight. You didn't hardly ever see them. I have an advantage. I'm sitting here broadcasting to you about something that I'm watching on YouTube. And I actually see this man playing. It's remarkable what he's capable of doing. Before he died, he finally came to prominence in New York City, and had the opportunity to play with the great Oscar Peterson. They did some music together. Nat King Cole did some music together with this fantastic man, as well as Charlie Parker. Many people believe that Charlie Parker and Oscar Peterson were extremely similar, and also another gentleman who played the piano by the name of Bud Powell, who just did a remarkable job. Although their styles are, when you get to Bud Powell, we're talking about a more modernistic jazz element that was included. But Paul was a child prodigy. He started playing when he was, professionally at the age of 12. People used to put his age up so he could get into playing some of these nightclubs. And it actually affected him later on, because he really never had that much of a childhood. Now, I'm not talking about Art Tatum. Art Tatum was beat up one time, and one of his eyes were hanging out of his socket. He could barely see to start off with. But people, at that particular time, didn't know. All they saw was that you were a black person, and they just beat him up for no reason whatsoever, just to be beaten up on somebody. But when they found out later on down the road who he was, it was remarkable the kind of treatment he received. We're going to see if there's a little thing here called a documentary about Art Tatum, and let's see if there's anybody else out here who has something to say that might be worthwhile hearing. Here's a...
his financial support of viewers like you. Thank you. The production and presentation of this program is made possible in part by a grant from the Ohio Arts Council.
This time ago, there was a town and he stopped in Toledo. And he stopped and went after all the drinks and he's been that way and they didn't find him drinks and anything. And he said, some guy walked up to him and tapped him on the shoulder and said, listen, he said, I have a blindfold on you. Would you mind it playing? And the guy thought, all right. He says, no. He says, I don't mind it playing. So finally, he got the seat and sat down. And he said, everything you do, he started at the bottom end of the piano and the scale up to him like this and picked up the right hand. Where was another end of the piano? And then he reached his hands and got an engine rod and he wiped his head. And I mean, really, he really played something there. So this guy said, he looked at that. He said, my God, he said, he's back on work, man. He was on out of there. And so when he got started playing, he said, Jack, he said, listen. I knew there was no place for me. He said, he come on out of there, went on out of there, started training, come on back home. And he told Mr. Jack, I'm telling you the truth, said, listen, if you ever light here, you'll know it.
He was a man who sent more than one piano player packing for home. In an encyclopedia of jazz musicians poll, 68 out of 100 voted for him. Yet the name Art Tatum is less well known than the names of the men who admired him, even in his hometown, Toledo. Horseless carriages were beginning to appear, but bicycles and wagons were the main transportation at the turn of the century, the time when Arthur Tatum Sr. moved from the Carolinas to settle in Toledo. An asterisk was placed next to his name in the city directory. It signified that he was black. On October 13, 1910, Art Jr. was born. Mildred Tatum encouraged her children to play, but Art's perfect ear was not always appreciated by his sister, Arlene.
My mother, she would tell me, all right, it's time to practice, come on in. So I would forget that Art was a certain bit, you know. So wanting to go out and play, you know, I'd come in and practice a little bit, you know, and I'd run through it right quick. And Mom, she would say, okay, now, take the next one. And I'd take the next one, and I'd hold down there. She got through the first one, yes. He'd be upstairs in the bed, probably asleep, but, I mean, he just thought of music that well, you know.
Flower Hospital represented a landmark to young Art Tatum. Blind since infancy, a series of operations there gave him partial vision in one eye.
So anyway, Dr. Levin got him to see him in one eye. And he used to go and play pool. And he liked to play cards. And he'd hold the cards up real close, you know. And he could see sometimes some of the boys would buy cards with large numbers on and things, you know, for him, you know, because they liked to play with him. And he loved to play cards.
Art probably had partial vision downward. And when he walked down the street on the basketball floor, he would always elevate his head. So he as far back as he could, so he, whatever vision he had, it came from that direction. And he would come to play basketball, and like to shoot marbles, and he would even try to throw a ball for you, things like that. And walking down the street, I never saw him in the King. He took long steps, reaching out as if he was anticipating and calling something, he could check himself.
They played marbles, shooters, they called shooters, and they played over in the alley over there. There was a little area over there where they played at, and they played football and baseball. I think he'd be right, he loved football. He'd be right in them with the football.
He was accepted as any other fellow in the crowd. He did everything the rest of them did, or at least he tried, and no one ever accused him of being backward.
Though he loved sports, music continued to be his main interest. The musical activities at the Frederick Douglass Center were an early influence. Still legally blind, Tatum attended special classes of the Toledo Public Schools, where he took piano lessons from Overton Ramey. Several years later, Bill Kummerow became one of Ramey's pupils.
I was taking
a piano lesson, and I happened to be beating my foot. And he said, boy, you don't beat your foot. He said, you've got to count. 1, 2, 3, 4, and he was kind of mad about that. And he said, you know what you remind me of? Art Tatum. He said, all the blacks beat their feet. And he said, did you ever hear of Art Tatum? And I said, no, I haven't. And he said, he has wonderful technique, wonderful. But he always had a but. He likes jazz.
I tried on jazz, and Toledo, during Prohibition, was a fertile place for jazz players. Despite an occasional raid, the clubs did well. From the respectable speakeasies like the Green Hill and Chateau de France, to the after-hours bootleg joints downtown, Chicken Charlie's, Waiters and Bellman's.
Just one bootleg joint after another up and down Illinois Street. And Tatum would go in and the crowd would just go mad. Art is in the house, you know. Drinks would be fine, you know. Get him a pitcher of beer.
They were all waiting for Tatum because he worked at the Chateau of France. And that's what he called up over there. And he showed up there every night. And he walked in, basically called him the boss. So when he walked in and he started to play, nobody would follow him.
Like Rusty's Jazz Cafe today, the after-hours clubs of Prohibition were a gathering place for musicians who wanted to play pure jazz. Tatum was drawn to the after-hours spots throughout his career. One of his favorites was Val's in the Alley, a Cleveland club. Hollywood gave us their version of an after-hours spot in The Fabulous Dorseys, the only theatrical film Tatum appeared in. The real thing was not quite so slick.
Val's was a little cottage. There was a big coal stove, a potbelly stove that sat in one corner. One door in and out, the front door. And you'd sit there, and every time anybody opened the door, the smell of everything coming in. And so you're sitting in these circumstances, and it seemed that nobody inhaled. I mean, the room just filled with smoke, and the smell of that coal burning and everything. You had to like, I mean, this was an intriguing place. I mean, it wasn't, you know, all calm and that sort of thing. And every time that door opened, there was the snow, and then would come some musician with a music case. You know? And I'd been in there on Saturday nights. And you'd look up there, and here's Tatum, and there may be seven guys up there, and they're all playing, you know. Meantime, there's other people coming in, and they're unpacking their instruments. So it was nothing by 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, but that corner of the room where the piano was, where all these musicians were, there'd be 15, 20 people standing up there waiting their turn, or they had just gotten through, or whatever it was. But this little room, you could just imagine, and these fellows, there were no amplifiers or anything like that, you played wide open. And when those 15 or 20 guys would cut loose, you've seen those Mickey Mouse cartoons where they're having a fight in the walls and the building just pulsate and throb and expand. And that's just the way you could almost feel this little building in your eardrums. It was like somebody walking out in your eardrums with golf shoes on or something. It was just, it almost hurt, believe me, it almost hurt.
Through his after-hours playing, Tatum became known to many named musicians passing through Toledo. But his late hours also led to a tragic encounter.
My mom was asleep, because I was asleep, you know. And Mr. Adams, he started hooting the house. Oh, Mr. Tatum. Because I and my dad went to the window and asked him, what's the matter? And he said, I thought he was laying here. Come out here right away. So Miss Janet said, put her room on. She was outside, you know, with her. And my mother and dad went outside, and naturally I did too, you know, went out there. And his eye was sort of hanging out with a guy. He didn't probably even look black yet. At least that's what they think was a black guy. Trying to rob him. But he only got a little chained up of him because I usually would hide his money. So he didn't get the money. You know, he just got a little change, maybe a couple dollars, something like that, that I had in his pocket loose. So they brought him in the house and brought him in here and something. And the nurse went and called Dr. Levin, so she called Dr. Levin. And Dr. Levin said, I'll be there in a few minutes. So he came over and he taken that eye or something out, the ball or something out in there, and did something to it and put it back and then bandaged it up. And so the next day, the night went to him, you know. But he never did see any more of that eye. So he didn't want to go under any more operations, eye operations.
Unwilling to face more surgery, Tatum continued to concentrate on his playing as he waited for the right moment to move. WSPD featured him on a radio program that was eventually picked up by the NBC Blue Network. But his big moment came in 1932 when singer Adelaide Hall came to the Rivoli Theater. One of her pianists, Joe Turner, had been told to look up Tatum. He did. But the result of his piano duel with Tatum was not the kind he was likely to report to Adelaide. She was staying with Doc Stewart and his wife, Ella P., above the Stewart Pharmacy, and she was concerned about Francis Hill, her other pianist, who was ill.
When Adelaide came in, the second night she was here, she had two pianists, and her husband was her manager, Bert, and she stayed there at the house, and so that night then we were talking after the show, and he said, well, we just have to find somebody. Do you know anybody that can play a piano? And right away I thought about Art Tatum.
An audition was set up at the All Saints Episcopal Church. Hill recovered in time to play the Rivoli job, but Adelaide was impressed with Tatum's playing, and a few months later she called the Stewarts to make arrangements to hire Tatum.
Mr. Stewart and I got together because I was the person that always wanted something on paper. And had Slater Gibson, who was attorney Slater Gibson, here in Toledo, to write up the contract. And they wrote up a contract for Tatum to go with Adelaide Hall.
Some people said that Tatum left too soon, but many people tried to convince him to leave sooner, including Duke Ellington.
Duke used to come to Toledo in I knew the Duke pretty well, also Sonny Greer. They used to ask me about Art, when he would leave and come to New York. In fact, they talked with him. And then there were others, even Fats Waller. Now, he should have believed Fats Waller because Fats Waller took music from James B. Johnson, who, as I say, devised the Stride method of piano playing. But Tatum kept saying he wasn't ready. I guess he wanted the assurance that he would be acclaimed as the greatest when he arrived in New York. And this is what exactly happened.
He was quickly proclaimed the greatest, a fact that raises questions. What was different about Art Tatum?
We both started with the same teacher. I beat my foot like Art Tatum. I liked Fats Waller, and I copied some of his music. Apparently, he was an influence on Tatum, although he was far, far ahead of Waller when he finally finished. And then, of course, the Lee Sims thing, and even so that he's having the beer on the end of the piano. So there's five influences I had, and why can I go as far as that?
I analyze a lot of players in this business. Many players function as a total unit. Like Starting Shaw, for instance, playing years ago. Colin Hawkins, Charlie Parker, Art Tatum. Mentally and physically, And whatever goes around in the nervous system has one common unit, you see. And it seems like their fingers go with their brain and their mind body automatically.
He also had, he was blessed with a hand that had a tremendous reach, a big hand. And I'm sure he had tremendous dexterity. And he certainly must have had a lot of love for what he was doing. He never hardly stopped playing. Because mine was the fact that while he was performing his music and stuff, you could hear things going on while he was playing. And some of you would be going on so fast, you just wonder how he even crossed that fast and was able to take his ideas and put them through his hands and onto the piano. He had perfect pitch. He certainly had a tremendous sense of rhythm. I don't know if beating his foot helped that or not. He carried a rhythm. He carried a rhythm.
Rhythm, reach, and perfect pitch aside, it was Tatum's left hand that helped make him unique. Able to play different songs with each hand simultaneously, Tatum took the basic left-hand techniques, stride, walking bass, and copying chords, and was able to mix them with a speed that was unsettling to other musicians.
I thought the musician said, Jack, I know exactly what the guy's doing. He said, but the speed, he doesn't, you know, and then she gives up.
With talent enough to make other piano players want to quit, Tatum did enjoy financial success and regular work, but his style was not always appreciated by the general public.
And I tell him, you know, he listened, and then he sat down and played for me. And I remember my mother had to leave the room because he played just so much piano. And I went back in the kitchen. I said, Mother, what's wrong, man? He said, man, that man just plays too much piano.
The thing about Aunt Jane was he played so many notes that it was mind-boggling. And anything that's mind-boggling turns off most people.
He plays too much piano for the average layman. And I think if the average layman would try anything on piano, then he would be able to understand how far advanced this man is.
His playing to an average person was far out. Was far out. But what it was really far out, it was the most contained and valid music I can think of, you see. But you always face the same kind of a problem with the public. Years ago, when I was struggling, I don't know how many years ago, but I played Rock Island, Illinois, places like that. Berlin. I played a club and I had a backup group that was fairly good, but not great. But I was playing some jazz that I liked to play and dying with it. I mean, we emptied one house after another. So, in desperation, on a Saturday night, it was kind of a noisy bunch. People drinking, getting juiced, you know. I happened to see backstage in another top hat. And just to pass the time and get through the job, I grabbed the top hat and came out with the top hat on. And I played like Ted Lewis. I don't know if you ever heard Ted Lewis, which was ridiculous, you know. It was a joke, except that the audience liked it. And my boss came to me and he said, well, I heard you were good, but I didn't know you were that good. Right. But that's a good example. I mean, it just hits you right in the head. It's a clear example of what a musician like R. Tatum had to contend with.
Tatum had more than one problem to contend with. An unknown piano player once said, thank God he's black, or none of our jobs would be safe. But Tatum wasn't one to accept the status quo.
But anyhow, he said he wouldn't play the club unless his own people could, you know, come in to hear him. So the management said, okay. And he wouldn't do the crowd in there, too. And nothing. I don't think they stopped it after that because they had a nice time celebrating. So that was one thing he broke into.
In the end, it was probably his sheer musical genius that kept Tatum on the edge of the spotlight.
He was like Brian. They were both a genius. They had to do what they were doing, and they had to develop their way of playing. And there was no other way, no other course, but to go in the opposite direction of the public.
There was nothing like rock and roll. A lot of like one of jazz, but art was just outstanding. And mostly the musicians were really impressed with it.
Hey, are you guys going to take me to the jam session of Arcadia tonight, or aren't you?
All right, I guess I get an old doggy. Let's go hear a real musician.
Tatum's biggest fans were other musicians. As for the piano players, their admiration was matched by their intimidation. An incident at a club in New York was typical.
So one night when I was there, Duke Ellington and his manager came in. And he sat down, and Tatum was already playing. So after Tatum got done with the set, the manager came over and knocked over the PA system at the ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest in the house. And when we were paused, we may get in the setting and play number, you know. So naturally, give me applause. Because everybody knew Duke Ellington would be a big name. So after the announcement, the applause subsided. He got up and he said that it says in his contract that wherever Taylor was playing, he does not play. So naturally, he didn't play. He thanked the audience for the recognition and all that, but he would not fit in. And like I said, that was true for nearly everybody that I know of. Before he came in, everybody would set in, you know. But when the boss walked in, when he played, that's where it stayed right there. And nobody followed Tatum.
For the first time that I really absolutely fell in love with somebody work, I went straight on the radio. By accident, I just turned on a jazz station. And I heard some guy playing a humoresque with Dvorak. And it was all jazzed up, and it was absolutely incredible playing, and I didn't know who it was. And then the announcer said that it was Art Tatum. And, of course, that just totally slew me because I've never had anybody with such incredible facility in that particular idiom.
Itzhak Perlman was not the only classical musician who admired Tatum, and in spite of his love of jazz, Tatum had a taste for the classics, too.
So this is an audience of jazz. The tones are beautiful, except that hardly, very hardly. I was just wondering, you could manage to play any kind of Bach, anything from Bach. Do you know Bach? He said, however, towards your mind playing sometimes. And it's the second one. So he sat down and started playing Bach. And an hour later, he was still coming back. And so he stopped. Already said, she said, I never will open my big mouth again. Not like that.
Tatum respected many of the classical composers, especially Bach and Chopin. His recording of Mezonet's Elegy, however, hints that he may have felt that some classical pieces were taken too seriously. In that recording, he quotes from Grieg's Serenade. The Stars and Stripes Forever. Then brings the tempo up to piano roll pace. In 1956, Tatum bought a white tie and tails, anticipating a formal recital tour, but it was plagued him that year. He gave up the beer glass at the end of the piano, but he also recorded a series of albums. Buddy DeFranco remembers his sessions with Tatum well.
He's playing along, and sometimes I'd be playing and watch his fingers. And he's always fascinated the way, trying to figure out how he played all those runs. put his thumb underneath his hand. It was completely unorthodox. But it would come out. Well, it really came out beautifully. So, I don't know if he knew Art's name at all, but he, in the middle of the solo, put one hand on his knee, and I'm trying, and he looked around laughing at me. How about this? You know, you played a couple of chords in one hand, see? Great trick. You know, I forgot to come in because I was kicking him, and he thought that was hilarious. Since I was 5 or 6, I had 13 records. But still, there's nothing like the experience of working with somebody like that to know. And you find, you know, that energy. And I'd like to know a couple shots at it.
9 months after the DeFranco sessions, Tatum died in Los Angeles. The funeral book read like a who's who in jazz. In his short career, he had redesigned jazz piano, and his success left a double challenge for young Toledo players. Tatum proved that a local musician could rise to the top, but does lightning strike twice? Perhaps all piano players feel like Count Basie when he agreed to let a young blind man sit in. He stood close to the piano so that he could jump in and save him if he had to. Years later, Basie said, "I'm still standing there."
The production and presentation of this program was made possible in part by a grant from the Ohio Arts Council.
Yes, that was a documentary done on Art Tatum back in, I think it was 1976 that this particular documentary took place. And I was lucky enough to be able to pull it up. Sometimes you're lucky and sometimes you're not. But in this case, I had a little backing in it, and it worked out very, very well for me and allowing me to share with you some of the pieces of information that I would have only given you in partial, where it was done in a holistic manner, allowing you to see the whole man, the kinds of experiences he had besides playing the piano. So we've talked about the great Art Tatum for pretty close to an hour, with about 40 some minutes left on the show that we use on the show for Art Tatum. And I also wanted to tell you about another particular musician that we're going to be talking about, at least for the period of time that I have you with me today, along with whom I might be able to play some more things about at another time. But the great Art Tatum cannot be replaced. He was just unreal in terms of his ability and the kinds of things he was able to do. But I'm going to pull up something by another musician out in the field, and I think I'm going to talk about a person that you might find to be really remarkable. And his name was Bud Powell, who many of the people who thought he was pretty good, but he started off and played really well. But his problem was that he started too young to be able to experience. He became old before his time, and eventually lost his mind, and he's in and out of solemns because of playing the piano, and then have to pull him off the piano because he wouldn't want to leave. And his sets were, when most jazz musicians playing a set would be something like, for one song, probably maybe no more than about 10 to 15 minutes. But Paul would get on the piano and start playing the piano, and they'd have to pull him off the piano. And the music that you hear in the background is Charlie Parker, who at some particular point, you know, we're going to have to talk about Parker.
he's on this particular move with a gentleman by the name of Coleman Hawkins, who was a great jazz tenor saxophone, while Parker was a great alto saxophone player. And we were going to be talking about them. But I'm going to leave you today with a song called Moaning by Art Blakey. We're going to jump from jazz pianist, and then listen a little bit of that, and then I'm going to come out and close the show and tell you about what you can expect for next week. Let's pull up Art Blakey.
Thank you.
Who's up in Connecticut, who is a big jazz pizzicato. His mantra is actually the drums, but he fools around with the guitar every now and then. And I see my buddy down in Florida was on the listening to the show today. And so what you've been listening to is Getting It Done with Dr. Dean. And this was Bobby Timmings playing on the piano. It was played in All About Blue, and fantastic position. Next week, Getting It Done will be featuring the great pianist, who I consider to be number four. And you'll have to wait for me to tell you who that is. So until next week, have a good one, wherever that good one is. This is Dr. Dean, and you've been listening to Getting It Done.
Hey, what's the thing of the show, man?
Oh, man, that was good.
Huh?
That was good. How about our kids, man? Isn't that all right? Yeah, well, what's the best? And of course, you can use it.
Let's see if I can call my girl down in Florida.